Hi everyone. Thanks so much for joining today's session on how to ace a virtual on-site interview. We're going to get started. I just want to mention that this is going to be recorded, so if anyone is joining in between, they can always listen in at the end or you can share it in your network. And we'll also be saving some time towards the end for any questions. But if you have any burning questions in between, feel free to leverage the chat box and we'll have a look there. Before we get started, I want to present myself and share a little bit about my background. So my name is Neha and I'm a program manager here at Hired. And I'm always open to connecting. If you ever have any questions around career strategy or job seeking, I'm more than happy to take those questions. So feel free to connect on LinkedIn. I also have a career blog on Instagram, so feel free to follow me at NehaKoram underscore. And I'll hand it over to our guest speaker. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, Paul.
Hi there, I'm Paul Harsha. I'm here because I've done a lot of remote interviewing and a lot of video interviewing even before all this started. So I've given a few insights to Neha. So hopefully I'll be able to give you some insights as well.
Great, thank you. And now we have a poll. So I'd just like to get a sense of whether or not anyone in the room has interviewed remotely before. So you'll actually see a pop-up, which has popped up on my screen as well. Have you interviewed remotely before? So you can kind of select yes or no. Okay, so it seems like 70% so far have interviewed remotely and about 30% no. So for those that find this to be something brand new, hopefully we can share some insights with you and have you feeling prepped for your virtual onsites. So for today's agenda, we're going to be diving into some quick facts about remote work in general, as well as how to advocate for a remote interview. Then we'll dive into some virtual onsite tips. Then we'll walk through remote whiteboarding. And then we'll talk about starting a new job remotely. And at the end, we'll save some time for some questions. So some quick facts. Top industries for virtual companies, for sure, programming and IT. There's tons of jobs where you really don't need to be in the office in order to accomplish your role, as well as HR and recruiting. That can be done virtually. So that's another industry, as well as education. And then finance, law, marketing, news, and media. These are all areas where a lot of jobs can be done remotely. And Hired's Brand Health Report published last year did a survey to get a sense of how many candidates are actually open to working remotely. So just to give you a pulse on your competition, about 65% are open to working remotely and about 35% not so much. And this is before the whole COVID situation. Paul, does any of this surprise you or do you have any thoughts on this?
No, it makes complete sense. I mean, remote work, I've worked in completely virtual companies in the past, and it's you just adjust to it and adjust your processes to deal with it. So it makes sense.
All right. I also wanted to share currently hiring industry. So these are all the industries that either are still hiring, have either paused the interview process, so there's a hiring freeze, or there's some layoffs. So this is to give you a quick pulse. So you can see here IT infrastructure, business software, productivity software, there's the green bars there. And then obviously travel and transport and discretionary spending industries, those are kind of hit hard during this crisis. So this is just to give you a pulse on what's happening in the market. Moving into how to advocate for a remote interview. Address it early on. So be transparent during the phone screen and highlight any previous remote experience that you might have. Be flexible, so show concern for their needs. If they're opting to continue with the interview process but potentially put a hold on the start date, you might be able to kind of negotiate that with them. But you know, given it is uncertain times, try to work with them and propose an arrangement. So I would also urge you to, you know, think about whether or not you want to include an indefinite remote work policy, just given we don't know how long the recommended state laws would encourage us to self-isolate. And you don't want a company rushing you back on site if you're not feeling safe. So maybe covering your bases in the offer letter there. And then, is there anything that you would add here, Paul? Anything, any advice to advocate for a remote interview?
So I would say two things. One, if companies are purely or mostly virtual already, they'll have this ready and they'll propose it to you. The second is if they're not, they're usually working their way towards it as well. So it's a learning experience. And we've never done this before. So be open to collaboration and saying, hey, how is this going to work best? Just, you know, make it a conversation, I think is great. Approach.
Definitely, definitely. And I would say for job seekers who are a bit worried about hiring freezes or processes being stalled, this is a good way for you to, as Paul said, create a conversation, and you can kind of steer the hiring process if they're a little bit uncertain and they're still figuring things out. Showcasing some flexibility can help move things forward, and consistently following up as well. Moving into virtual on-site tips. So, of course, check your tech, make sure that your mic is working, and have your phone nearby in case anything happens with your internet and you need to dial in. And it's still an interview, so dress to impress. I think in the tech space, typically folks are a little bit confused as to what they should wear to an interview. Sometimes a suit and tie is a bit too much. Paul, do you have any recommendations on how to dress for an interview in tech and then again for a virtual on-site?
Our recommendation has always been, well, for years, has been business casual. Some places will say, oh, you know, you can wear jeans. You know, the rule of thumb is dress a little bit better than the position you're going in for. Most companies, people aren't wearing suits and haven't for a long time, at least tech companies. So a nice button-down shirt and slacks, even if you're only going to be seen from the neck up, you know, is the way to go in any interview situation in a tech company. Other companies may vary, but for my roles, you know, no, coming in the suits are not a thing.
Exactly, because then you can look a little bit out of place. And I would, again, extend that to virtual on-sites as well. You definitely want to dress to impress. Really like the idea of also making sure that from, you know, top to bottom, you're fully, you know, presentable. It also puts you in a certain mindset. And you just want to mimic the culture of the company that you're interviewing with. So if you're still a bit uncertain, you can always Google and kind of have a look at pictures of maybe employees there and what are they wearing. And bear in mind that they're there on a casual day, whereas obviously on an interview, you want to take it one step further. So that's something to keep in mind. And just as in a regular interview, you want to make sure you're maintaining eye contact as well as being mindful of your body language. I think it can be a little bit tricky with your laptop with the angles. So maybe practicing a little bit to see if you're happy with the lighting and the angles. Sometimes, you know, it's going to be dark in whatever room you're in, and that's kind of the best you can do, especially in the situation we're in currently. But do your best to find a good spot where the lighting and all of that kind of helps bring your presence across. And then Paul and I were chatting about how important it is to have spare paper and pens nearby. Paul, did you want to talk a little bit about this?
Sure. And normally in an interview, I would not bring a notebook. I tend to, you know, because there's whiteboards there. And so if there's anything you need to sketch out or write out, but I find that in virtual interviews, it helps have a piece of paper, both to take notes, but also, I don't actually have anything on it, but it's easier to do this sometimes, sketch things out than to whiteboard, or, you know, just quick show people your thoughts. Or And we'll get to whiteboarding later, I think. But if you know, to sketch your thoughts on paper before going to the whiteboard. So it's a different thing than when you can just like draw right there or interact right there.
Exactly. And so we are going to be moving into whiteboarding in a bit, but to Paul's point, there might be something that you want to quickly sketch out, and you can't do that until you actually open the program. And maybe that's kind of allotted in a different section of the interview, whereas on site, you can be a bit more agile with that. Also, have a glass of water at your desk. So I actually have my coffee right here if you want your coffee by your side. Something to keep in mind in virtual onsites is hopefully your interviewers are still asking you about breaks, but if this is a new process to them, they might not be as cautious as they would be in a regular onsite interview. So kind of, you know, monitor whether you need a break and don't be afraid to ask for that. Also, if you need to get a glass of water, you know, feel free to kind of do that, ask for that, but have it nearby so you don't have to go through that, because typically on an onsite, they would ask you if you want a glass of water and such. And then also go the extra mile to connect, because you're not meeting these individuals in person. Add them on LinkedIn and be super thoughtful in your thank you notes right after the interview. And don't make it a generic thank you note. Make sure that you're highlighting anything that you discussed in the interview. And then do your research on the company, do your research on them, and really make it show. So make sure that you're being super personable, as you are losing a little layer there when you're virtual. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we move on, Paul?
Nope, that's exactly what I would say. So it's great.
Okay, perfect. And questions to ask the interviewer. So I often get asked by candidates what questions to ask an interviewer. So I would think of, can you describe the team dynamics? What do you like about working at company X? So that's actually a question you could ask any of the interviewers. Also asking whether or not this is a brand new role or whether you'd be replacing somebody. Asking what the top priority to focus on for someone stepping into this role would be, as well as any roadblocks that you should prepare for if granted the position. Paul, how do you feel about these questions? Is there anything you'd like to add to this?
These are actually all questions I would ask. I will usually push on culture, or, you know, on a more positive, you know, what's your favorite thing about working there, just to open them up as a starter question. But yeah, you know, that ties into the dynamics question. You can't see me pointing. But you know, that all, you know, ties into what you like about working, and, you know, how to just get a positive conversation going. So you're getting a feel for what they're like a little bit off the deep actual interview section.
Exactly. So it's a way to build rapport as well as to also address concerns. So thinking about any genuine concerns that you might have, you definitely want to address those, but also being mindful of who the interviewer is and saving some questions for the hiring manager versus someone from the product department and so forth.
Exactly.
Right. And then I wanted to touch quickly on behavioral interview questions. So these are some common questions that might come up. So the first being, what is an area of improvement that you're currently working on? Or sometimes you might be asked about a weakness or a failure. So the key point here would be to discuss learning outcomes as well as an action plan. Paul, is this something that you've been asked before, or have you asked this in an interviewer, since I know you've also recruited for your teams before?
Yes. Also a lot of tell me about a time questions. So tell me about a time when you faced X, you know, project that failed, or as a manager, an employee issue where, you know, you help somebody grow, or, you know. So STAR is very much a thing, obviously. Yeah, these are the type of questions most people get or give, not get.
Yeah, give. For sure. So that's a really interesting point that you shared there, where the question could be framed as, tell me about a time a project failed. So any instance where you're asked to provide an example or describe a time or tell me about a time, immediately you should think about STAR. So I've got a little image up there. It's an acronym for situation, task, action, and result. And it helps anchor your response and make sure that you're providing enough context for the example, but also really delivering, you know, an idea of the value there with the action and result piece. I think that's the area where a lot of folks don't end up really, you know, sharing the impact or what they actually did there. Also, another question that comes up very often is, where do you see yourself in the next 2 to 3 years from now? So my advice would be to convey mutual alignment with the role's career track. So, you know, don't get too ahead of yourself saying that I want to be the director if you're, you know, I guess in an IC role. But do you have any thoughts on that, Paul?
That's a tough question. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to take all questions in general into things about the current role. Mm-hmm. You know, because you also behavioral questions you'll get is like, what would your friends say about you? And like, you know, as a fit for this position, I would be this. So the 2 to 3 years from now is a good time, as you already say here, is convey mutual alignment. So mm-hmm. this position interests me because I am interested in doing X, Y, and Z, and you offer me the opportunity to do it. So again, to always tie it back.
Exactly. It's all about tying it back, because you could run the risk of disqualifying yourself if you pick something that's really not in the wheelhouse of what they do. So then they might think that in 2 to 3 years from now, you might be gone. There's some hiring managers I've spoken to that are okay with that if they think that you're using this as a stepping stone to do something else. But it really depends. So if you're really dead set on landing the opportunity, I would potentially not, you know, talk about this as a stepping stone for something else, unless you're maybe a little bit more junior in your career. But it's better to just tie it back to the immediate opportunity and what the next step would be in-house. Also, another big question is, describe a recent challenge you faced and how you solved it. Or as Paul mentioned, describe, you know, a project that failed, or even just describing a project that you're currently working on and, you know, what the status is currently. So you can kind of be asked about sharing parts of your work experience. And another key point here again is to bring it back to the role itself. So share an example that's actually going to, you know, predict some value for the role that you're interviewing for. So if you've worked in a similar industry in the past or worked with similar tools in the past, try to tie it back to that. Also, lastly, describe a time that you've worked with a difficult individual. The intention behind this question is to think about, you know, conflict resolution, but rather than focusing on the individual, think about the action plan. What are the steps you took to actually resolve the conflict, and what was the impact? With this question, I typically find people will start describing the person too much and the problem too much versus the action and, you know, what happened afterwards. So Paul, do you have any experience with that question, and do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, I mean, we've given it, you know, there's many ways to phrase this, but you know, what you're looking for is the result, right? Mm-hmm. How did you get around it? How do you deal with conflict? Because there's going to be conflict. I mean, that's part of it. But again, this is why I think STAR is a really good framework, because it's the result that matters. It's like what you did and what the results were, and, you know, not so much the situation. It could be, you know, you could invent a difficult person, to be honest. It's really, how do you approach a problem?
Right. So you touched on an interesting point there. You could invent a difficult person. So the employer might also be trying to understand who you see as a difficult individual. So also trying to get a sense of your working style and whether or not you would be a good cultural fit. So that's also something to keep in mind, and maybe thinking about what the company values are, studying up on that, and kind of, you know, framing your examples to be in line with that culture.
Yeah, that's where I was going, because it's really, again, mm-hmm. about what matters to you, and it's really a fit question more than anything mm-hmm. else.
Very true, because different working styles are going to be more in conflict than others. So this is kind of one of the areas where you might be able to showcase that.
Exactly.
And then moving on to remote whiteboarding. So Paul had shared a couple of tools that he's had experience using during remote interviews. So Paul, do you want to kind of go through each of these and maybe talk about your experience or advice with each of these?
The whiteboarding tools are pretty similar. I mean, you can draw boxes, you can connect them with arrows and circles, and people are looking for you for diagram and drawing pictures just like you would in the interview. As I said a little bit earlier, I think it definitely helps in a remote environment to draw it yourself and then translate it rather than being freehand. I think the important thing with any of them is to find out what you'll be using if you can, and practice with it. Because know where the menus are, know how to shade things, not to worry about like making it pretty in 3D because it's an interview. It's not a, and well, for most interviews, you're not doing a formal presentation. That's a whole different interview. Coderpad is a different thing. Well, people are going to be asking you to write code in a panel and debug it or get it to compile at least and produce a result. And you should again practice with it, know its quirks. So I think that's my number one piece of advice. Practice, practice, practice.
Okay, great. Also, when it comes to Google Drawings, for example, so that's something that you might be very used to using. So maybe that's your go-to tool for diagrams. And if they haven't really mentioned, what you can or cannot use, try to actually clarify with them and let them know that, this is my tool of choice. Is this something that I can use during the interview? And then you can kind of just screen share and use that. So trying to ask them what their preferred tools are, but then also advocating for any preferred tools that you might have. Because obviously, if you're more comfortable using one thing, it's going to be in your benefit to use that during the interview. But of course, they might have stricter policies. So it seems like Zoom, for example, has their own whiteboarding tool. If a company prefers that you use that, maybe just getting that clarification in advance. And to Paul's point, practicing and not spending as much time on the menus, but actually solving the problems. Another thing, Paul, that you said that makes a lot of sense is don't worry so much about making it pretty. You also have to be mindful of the time and kind of keep moving and just make sure that you're kind of talking through your approach as you're doing it.
Right, and again, that is, I think that is the salient point. It's like when I'm interviewing, I'm looking for your approach, not necessarily the right answer, but how you got to the answer. So this is what the tool is for. You show your work, so to speak.
Perfect. Okay. So, other tips. So, I think we kind of covered these, but just to reiterate, as Paul was saying, talk through your problem-solving approach. Ask clarifying questions, be mindful of the time and know when to move on. And then these are also some resources if anybody is looking to practice their code. Skill Crush, Interview Cake, for the behavioral interview questions and other tech interview questions, you can also kind of go through the Hired Candidate blog. I'd also encourage you to connect with your mentors. So, if you don't have a mentor, there's a great resource called Code Mentor where you can find a mentor. And then I would also think about looking through your school or work alumni, even if someone was an acquaintance, you'll be surprised. People are pretty open to offering their advice. I mean, just as a great example, me asking Paul to do this webinar with me. So, you'll be surprised people are very willing to help and share their thoughts. Also, career coaches. So, if you are on the Hired platform, you might be assigned a talent success manager. So, they are career coaches that you can also practice with behavioral interview questions if you want to do a mock interview. Are there any final tips here when it comes to whiteboarding, Paul?
I think these are great. Really good.
Okay, awesome. And then moving into starting a new job remotely. So this might be new for a lot of folks. I know it was kind of unexpected for me. I'm still adjusting. So when it comes to onboarding remotely, this is something that a lot of companies are also having to do for the first time in some cases. But to Paul's point earlier on, he mentioned that there's companies that have been virtual, you know, before this whole crisis. So something to think about is setting up your own laptop. And a lot of the times a company will send one to you. And also you might be asked to attend a virtual onboarding session. Paul, in your experience, what has onboarding been like with a virtual company?
So as you mentioned, you know, there's two models. One where people set up their own laptops, two where people send it, you know, the IT or infrastructure group will send you a laptop. Probably 50-50 on that. Usually it, there's an onboarding session. You log in, that, you know, they'll talk you through setup, talk you through any local tools, talk you through, you know, culture. You know, typically, depending on the maturity of the company, there'll be some kind of culture deck, et cetera. But again, you need to be in a quiet place. You know, I mean, just like the tips at the start of this, good Ethernet connection, internet connection. And just be prepared to have to do some work to set up things which you would not normally have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's nobody there to help you, so you're gonna have to do it on your own. Don't be afraid to schedule one-on-one time or to ask for one-on-one time if you're stuck. I mean, that's probably my biggest piece of advice there, is speak up.
That's a really good point. You know, typically when you're on site, you might have someone from IT helping you out, and there's only so much they can do in terms of giving you the information and the tools. But as Paul said, speak up. I would try to obviously try to figure things out on your own, spend a little bit of time. Like if you're not able to solve something in 20 minutes, let's say, try to get a hold of somebody. So get familiar with the company's shared online resources. Maybe your answers are already up there, but also coordinate proactively with HR and other teams. So there might be IT support, obviously, but they're remote. So, you know, over communicate and don't be afraid to ask quote unquote silly questions if you spent some time trying to figure it out and aren't able to figure that out.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect. So that we're actually ready to take any questions. So if anyone has specific questions related to acing your virtual onsite, working remotely, please feel free to leverage the chat box and we'll just have a look there. And Paul, feel free to jump in if you see anything that you'd like to take there.
I mean, the question is, I can't think aloud. I have to think silently to come up with a solution, for example, for an algorithm. How can I adapt to the current interview need of interactivity? So my advice is, say, look, I need a few minutes to think this through. So speak up, take your time, and then talk through what your process was. So the important part to me is, yes, speak up, ask for the time, but also then explain your process. Because I'm also like that. I'm bad at coding tests, for example, because I'm somebody that needs to think about it. And you know, to spontaneously write code on a board is very hard for me. So I will write it up on a piece of paper or in my head and then write it up.
Mm-hmm. So another point I would mention there is don't be afraid to practice the pause. It's okay to take a moment to think. So long as once you've thought about it, be sure to speak up and kind of walk them through your approach. So I guess the key point here is to, you know, as Paul mentioned, you know, write it out, but also don't be afraid to take a little bit of time to think about it. And then The next question, do I need to ask for the interviewer's email address in order to send thank you notes? So this is something you could coordinate with the recruiter, but if, for example, there is no recruiter, it doesn't hurt to ask for the email address, but I'm assuming whoever would have coordinated the interview, you would have their email address so they can get you that. Paul, do you have any other thoughts on that?
It's hard because a lot of times the only contact you have is with the HR person or with the contact. So in that case, I would either, yes, ask for the people's addresses or look at them on LinkedIn or send a note saying, I would like to thank everybody, blah, 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 blah. And
Exactly. So, how long should STAR answers be? This is a great question. You don't want to spend 10 minutes on a response. I think trying to keep it to 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes, but also read the room. If you notice that maybe they're kind of, not following along, feel free to, ask clarifying questions in between and say, would you like me to dive in deeper? But don't ask that question until you've kind of said all the main bits. So maybe give kind of like a high level STAR answer, and then you can ask whether or not they'd like you to dive in deeper. And then maybe we get a PDF of the slide. So you'll actually get a recording, but I'll actually include a copy of the deck as well to everyone that registered. So we'll send that along. Most technical interviews are run by guys who have one way of thinking about how to approach a problem. So, okay. So someone coming from the arts has a very collaborative approach, and it can be a bit, so that's kind of your advantage, I guess you're saying. And then you're concerned it doesn't come off that well in your interviews. Paul, do you have any advice for someone in the arts who kind of wants to showcase that way of thinking is, almost a premium, if you will, but maybe folks that are a bit more technical might not see it that way. So for that, I would say, try to speak their language, try to cover whatever is important to them. But also, it sounds like you're pretty confident in your background. So then be sure to showcase that confidence as well and kind of, share the why of why is being in an arts background great for writing code. So obviously you're creating. So I think, honing in on the creative aspect might be something you could share. Question on conflict resolution. So that again, we had mentioned, we're kind of looking at personality types and fit. Is it okay to ask an interviewer to repeat questions? You can absolutely, but maybe there's a way for you to also clarify. So maybe repeat the question back to them or repeat the parts that you heard or rephrase the question and then, check in and say, is that what would you, is that what you would like me to answer? But if you really just didn't hear them, that's totally fine. Of course, ask clarifying questions. Paul, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you ever been asked that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's two parts to it. One, always feel free to ask clarifying questions. If you don't understand, ask. Second is, I'd much rather you ask questions than answer a different question that I asked. So say things like, I hear you asking this. Is that correct? If you're confused. And then go, here's my answer. Much better than going off on a tangent.
Exactly. Exactly. So the phrase, is that correct? That's really key there. And how would you recommend staying in touch with companies while they're on a hiring freeze? This is a great question. So I would put a note in your calendar for any companies that have told you that they've paused the process. Add a note in your calendar to check in every 10 days. And that way you're keeping in contact. But then if they've updated you on a timeline, let's say that they've said we're not hiring for the next month, then don't check in every 10 days necessarily. Just, check in a month then. So follow their timelines. If they don't provide one, check in every 10 days. Add whoever you've spoken to on LinkedIn. Make it a point to build relationships with these people and don't sell yourself. Save the selling for the interview. there's really no point of you selling yourself when there's nothing they could even really consider you for, or they're kind of uncertain. But this is a chance for you to build a relationship. So consistent follow-up is key, but follow their time frame and don't focus on selling. Okay, maintaining eye contact. Does that mean I should be looking into the camera rather than their eyes on the screen? Yeah, that's a really great point. So I think this is something that everyone is getting used to. I know myself when I'm presenting, I try to look right at the camera, but every now and then I think, when we're trying to express ourselves, we might kind of, our eyes might wander. So that's a really good point to kind of look straight at the camera, not, the individuals on the screen necessarily, because that's going to make you look like you have your eyes kind of down. So behavioral questions, how do you answer questions when you've generally had very little interaction with others? So someone here has worked on a very specific and focused programming tasks and always been good at working with little supervision. Well, I would say that there's still a lot of collaboration that happens even if you're focused on your individual work. So if you're being assigned work or if you're delivering it to another team, kind of focusing on that handover, for example. Paul, are there any thoughts on that?
I mean, again, the point of behavioral is really to find out, well, your work style. So if the answer is I prefer to work on my own, relatively unsupervised, that's information I need in hiring you. Because there's different personalities and different tasks. So be honest, I guess, is my number one answer is, don't try to pretend to be an extrovert. There's no need to, or don't. They just, yeah, just. That's my advice.
That makes a
Be
lot of
yourself.
sense. So definitely be yourself. I would also say, there's aspects of your work that you might not be very cognizant of. So maybe when you're used to working with little supervision, maybe you overlook the times that you have been supervised, or maybe you're overlooking the collaboration that you have participated in because you're not, very conscious of that, because most of the time that's not what you're doing. But that doesn't mean you haven't had the chance to do that. So here I would also think about like maybe just spending a little bit of time thinking a bit more. I think a lot of interviewing is being caught off guard and not knowing what to say, and you suddenly think, well, I've been working for 5 years. How do I not have one example of this? There's a good chance the example is there, but you just haven't had the time to think about it. So before going into an interview, spend some time looking at your resume and asking yourself the same questions that we kind of went through today, and maybe others from other resources, and ask yourself those questions per experience to kind of get those examples flowing and use the ones that are most relevant to the position that you're interviewing for.
Because I mean, my follow-up question on that is going to be, how do you know what to work on?
That's a great question. Exactly. So if you say that, I work without any supervision, for example, that's a bit extreme. To Paul's point, how do you know what to work on? So then if you have a process there, then really outline that. Also, any tips for companies? How can we as a company provide an excellent candidate experience in the current climate? So I think the slide that we're on, starting a new job remotely, when it comes to onboarding, for example, making sure that you're giving all the resources and tools to make your remote employee successful, and asking them whether or not they've been onboarded remotely before, because if they have, maybe they're a bit more used to it, they might be a bit more comfortable speaking up for themselves. If they're not, and this is their first time ever, then making it a point to check in more. So the same kind of advice in terms of over communicating as a candidate, I would also say to companies, they should be over communicating and checking in more. And then Paul, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's I think the gist of it. Over communicate. Anytime you're working remote, in general, communication becomes the center of it all. And with full remote onboarding, it becomes even more needed. So set expectations, try to give people a checklist for onboarding, try to set goals for people remotely onboarding so they know what their initial tasks are, give them a point of contact within the company. So if most people, well, used to be in one place, the remote person starting should have somebody they can ask questions of, a mentor
Yeah.
or
That's a great point. Maybe assigning a mentor to do those check-ins and create more rapport, or I guess, a form of connection with the company, because when you're on site, there's someone to turn to ask questions. And even though we have Slack and other apps to message on, maybe people are not as comfortable if it's their first day reaching out to somebody random. So assigning them a mentor is a really good idea. So someone mentioned whether or not they can have resources, I guess, next to them if it's a virtual on-site. I'm not sure what kind of resources, but I would say anything that's going to help you ace the interview, absolutely use your tools. But so long as you're, not being distracted by it, or it's nothing unethical, those are the two points that I would think about there. And then someone asked about the question that Paul had mentioned earlier, what your friends would say, what would your friends say about you? What's the best way to handle that? So definitely talking about your strengths. I wouldn't bother talking about your weaknesses here, because that's not what the question is. I would focus on the strengths, thinking about any genuine qualities that your friends admire about you. But again, this is an opportunity for you to also tie it back into the role itself. So being a little bit mindful of context. So, if your friends think you're a great dancer, that's cool, but maybe not something you want to talk about if you're asked that in an interview. Paul, do you have any thoughts on that?
yeah, any of those questions, I just tie them back to the role. Just always bring it back to the role, because in your social life is not really relevant to this, generally, unless you're like,
Exactly.
yeah, unless you're one of your avocations happens to be the company's product. But in general, you want to talk about the
Exactly.
role.
Exactly. So, being mindful of the context and thinking about what do they care about, right? And I think it's good to showcase a little bit of personality here and there, but overall, you want to be professional, and you really want to make sure that you're maintaining context. So not going too far out with non-essential details. So we've
And the
got
other
tons of
advice
questions.
is don't volunteer. It's literally just don't volunteer in this
Exactly.
particular question,
Yeah. So, someone had mentioned, should I talk about my weaknesses there? So there's no need. Don't ask, don't tell. They didn't ask you about your weaknesses in this question. If they're straight up asking for the weaknesses, that's a different story, where we kind of mentioned, please focus on the learning outcomes and, what was your action plan moving on. So again, not focusing so much on the problem itself, but what happened after and what can they expect from you if you were to face that situation again. Like, they want to make sure that you know how to handle it and you're going to succeed and come out on top.
Exactly.
Okay, so we'll just take maybe two more questions. All right. Once it was really hard for me to understand the interviewer's accent, and it was uncomfortable to have her repeat all the time. So this is a tricky one. I don't have too much advice here. I do think, if you need clarity, ask for the clarity. Even if it feels uncomfortable, you're not going to be able to move forward in the conversation unless you ask the clarifying questions. But again, just, continuing on in a positive tone and being cooperative, I think, is the saving grace there. And then, okay, so someone unfortunately was laid off due to the current situation, and they're wondering whether or not they should still put that company on their resume. I think it depends how long you work there. I typically would say anything under 6 months doesn't need to be on your resume unless it was super integral to the type of work you want to do in the future. Or, I would say, if it's something that, again, there's examples that you would want to share in an interview, then keep it on there. But typically, if it's under 6 months, maybe it doesn't need to be on there. Paul, do you have any thoughts on that?
That's generally accepted. That's, but it's also, you will get asked probably in first round while you're looking. Everybody will ask that, and then that I was laid off. That's perfectly acceptable. I
So a
think.
question about in the interview process, not onboarding, how can we as a company provide good remote interviewing experience? So just as you would during an on-site, make sure you're asking your candidate about breaks. And again, going back to over-communicating, so actually provide them with an itinerary of what the day is going to look like. So I would say not slacking on anything that you would do on a typical on-site and making sure you're providing all the information, making sure that they're comfortable and that they're, you know, taking breaks in between, especially if it's a 5-hour on-site. And asking the candidate if there's anything that they need, any special accommodation that they require. And then also with the whiteboarding, for example, it's better to share what tools are preferred. And then maybe being flexible in terms of if there's any tools they prefer using. So I would say, you know, the preparation and the over communication would be the 2 points, and just being human about it. If they need to get up to get a glass of water, maybe you can be the one to even ask, you know, before you start. Would you like to go ahead and get a glass of water or anything, as it's going to be a bit of a long day? Any other thoughts there before we wrap up?
No, that's exactly what it, that's a great answer.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Paul. Hopefully, everybody found this super insightful. As I mentioned, feel free to connect on LinkedIn and we can keep the conversation going there. Thanks. And best of
Thank
luck to
you.
everyone. Bye.